Welcome to another episode of Carry On Friends, the Caribbean American podcast. I'm Carrie Ann. My guest for this episode is Derval Barzi. But before we get into the topic, I want to give a big shout out and thank you to Maela, who was previously on the podcast and celebrated the one-year anniversary of that episode on Twitter. Maela is from Guadeloupe, and her episode was one many of you enjoyed because we don't often hear from people from Guadeloupe, part of the French Caribbean, or anyone from the Dutch Caribbean for that matter. Hopefully that'll change soon. It's a great episode to listen to if you haven't done so yet, and it's a great one to re-listen to. I'll make sure I'll put the link to it in the show notes. And again, thank you, Maela, for shouting out the episode and the podcast on your one-year episode anniversary. Now, let's get to our main topic. Hello, Derval. Welcome to Carry On Friends, the Caribbean American podcast. I am so excited that you are here. How are you today?
Hi, Carry On. I'm good. I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Awesome. Yes, yes, yes. So one of the things that I love about the work I do or through Caribbean Podcast Directory is making wonderful connections with other podcasters in the region or in the diaspora. And so Derval is one of those amazing people that I've met, and I love her podcast. I just love when we create podcasts that are very specific to our experiences or talk about things that mainstream media doesn't really talk about, but it's important. So Derval, why don't you tell the community of friends a little bit about who you are, Caribbean country you represent, although I think they might already figure that out, and a little bit more about your podcast.
Sure. So I'm Derval Barzi, hailing from the Twin Islands of Trinidad and Tobago. I've always had a passion for environment, so I studied that at the university level and then entered the world of work doing environmental risk management. And along the way, I got more involved and I guess more aware of climate change. And at that point in time, it was a future event, and come to today where we're actually seeing it happening. So I've always been mindful of my relationship with the environment, you know, enjoying being from the Caribbean, enjoying being in nature, but also witnessing its destruction as a result of, you know, human activities. So along those lines, and with my interest in sustainability, in 2020, April 2020, in the peaks of the pandemic, I launched the Climate Conscious podcast. And the objective was to raise awareness around sustainability and climate change, but from a Caribbean perspective, because from what I observed, the conversation around climate change was being led by what we call the global north or the more developed countries. So they were leading the discussions, they were leading the action, although the Caribbean and other small island developing states or even the global south, we are at the forefront of, you know, some of the most devastating impacts. So I just wanted to have conversations, start discussions around this topic to sensitize my Caribbean people, who I felt that if you're not directly in the environmental field, you may not be as connected to the issue of climate change and the urgent need for sustainability.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And so before we go a little bit further, I want to level set for some members of the audience. Some might already know and some might not be familiar. The global north is the newer term that we're using opposed to first world, and global south is the term that we're using as opposed to third world countries. So just want to level set those definitions. You said something very interesting, because I'm going to dive right in. At the time of this recording, we're still in the heights of hurricane season, which is not going to simmer down until November. Hurricane season happens annually. Haiti just had its earthquake. We've experienced the volcanic eruption in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And outside of hurricanes, it's constant tropical storms that's happening in the region. And just like you, there are certain things about nature that I love. I'm a rain person. I love the rain. And everyone looks at me crazy. I love it. It's the most calming experience. I love it whether I'm in it or in the house. I just like the idea of rain. And so growing up, I would just sit and watch the rain. And then my granduncles were fishermen. And whenever I go back to Jamaica, I'm always amazed to see where the shoreline is compared to where it was growing up. And for me, because I loved the rain, I loved being by the water, those are usually the first signs that I see that there's something environmentally happening. There's not as much beach anymore. You know, the water is almost right up to the shoreline. And so when you said you're seeing what's happening, what are you seeing happening in the region from an environmental standpoint?
So, Carrie-Anne, the very thing that, you know, defines us as Caribbean, sun, sea, the sand, you know, due to our geographical location, are the very things that make us vulnerable. You know, we're within that hurricane belt. And we all know June to November, it's the hurricane season. But over the years, we've been seeing where the intensity of those storms and those hurricanes, the intensity has been increasing, and also the frequency of those storms has been increasing. So you have, a number of Category 5 hurricanes, which have passed through the region. And we're even seeing where, you know, the hurricane season is extending beyond June to November, with storms being formed as early as May. So all of these impacts have been attributed. The science shows that these are linked to human activities and anthropogenic influences, mainly from carbon emissions, greenhouse gas emissions from industrial activities primarily. So we're in a region of considerable vulnerability, and we're seeing the social, the economic, and the physical impacts when you look at the devastation of Hurricane Dorian in the Bahamas and even what Dominica experienced. You know, it's really heartbreaking that, you know, this is not a one-off thing. This is a seasonal occurrence, and the projections are that it will get worse. And I mean, in addition to the climate-related impacts, there are also, you mentioned the earthquake in Haiti. We're also in a region that's prone to natural hazards, such as earthquakes and also the volcanic eruption in St. Vincent. So, you know, all these things just compound to create a very tricky situation where we face vulnerability on a daily basis. And, you know, you may wonder, well, how do we as a people face this? You know, and I think that is where the importance of developing resilience comes in. I think that as a people, we are resilient by nature, but we need to tap into it for this crisis that is upon us, the climate crisis, and also just dealing with natural disasters in general. You mentioned loving the rain, and I too enjoy the rain. It has, once I'm at home, I hate to be out in the rain. I hate to be driving on the roads, you know, that's heavy rainfall. But I have a backyard garden, so my plants, they thrive when there's rainfall. But at the same time, there's a bit of anxiety every time there's an extended period of rainfall, because, you know, 9 out of 10 times that results in flooding and people lose, you know, their property, it damages their homes. So the same thing that we enjoy and we appreciate is actually, it's like a double-edged sword. You know, so we can't change our geographic location, right? So what do we do? What do we do? So the emphasis is on building resilience, you know, that capacity to not just bounce back, but bounce forward.
You asked a very good question, which I'm thinking if anyone still listening is going to be like, what can we do? You know, hurricanes, earthquakes, volcano, those are all acts of God. We can't say, God, stop rain, stop hurricanes, stop anything. So how do we build resilience when these are all acts of God? There are things that are happening in nature. Yes. There's some human activity that contributes to this, and we'll get into that. But I think I want to focus on how do we build this resilience to bounce forward?
So it's important that we do our risk management. Since we're aware of the hazards that exist, we also need to look at how we can coexist with these hazards. And that's why the importance of risk management comes in terms of identifying and assessing the risks and the impacts and the sphere of influence. And maybe there are certain areas we don't want to have so densely populated. For example, if you look at the Soufré, there were zones, there's the red zone and there's the green zone. So maybe, you know, going forward, there may be consideration to the populations that you allow within certain areas. So that's one example of how we can manage the risks that exist in the region. And again, when we look at infrastructure, you know, the region has been spending a lot of money on physical infrastructure. Most of our development is centered around our coastlines. And our coastlines are vulnerable to sea level rise and coastal erosion. So when we're building, when we're investing, we also need to evaluate those investments to ensure that they have a measure of resiliency to climate change impacts or natural hazards that exist in the region. So it's about being proactive in our planning and taking a long-term view. You know, planning not just for this generation, but for the generation that's coming next. And I think if we adopt that mindset, you know, some of the decisions that we make that may have a short-term benefit, but in the long run, you know, may not be the most efficient use of resources. And that's where sustainability comes in, because an important element of sustainability is intergenerational equity. It's not just thinking about today. Simply put, I would say it's thinking about legacy, right? And being mindful of the vulnerabilities that exist.
So basically, anybody who's like, well, I'm going to die, I don't really care anyway, you're not thinking of the future. I also want to go back to where you talked about in order to bounce forward and we coexist with these hazards through risk management. So one of the things that I know from growing up in Jamaica, and I see it a lot watching the news, when we talk about infrastructure, we talk about, yeah, you're building a new road, but is there a proper drainage system that's happening? I may not have all the information, but I don't see a lot of this. So what are more like tangible things that the audience can say, oh, yes, the rain falls and it's flooding, but if there's a proper this, it might mitigate some of the flooding. Like, what are some of the things that countries can do to assess risks or mitigate some of the risks so we can coexist? Because like you said, there is a rainy season in the Caribbean. And once there's a rainy season, I'm sure a lot of my audience have seen videos in Jamaica where a whole cliffside is falling off. So how do we begin to mitigate some of these risks as it pertains to our climate?
You mentioned a very important element, which is drainage. And proper drainage requires planning, you know, and I'm not sure if it's a feature of the wider Caribbean, but some of our development seems to occur haphazardly. So it doesn't allow for proper planning and, you know, laying out the land, the topography and observing how the water moves. So drainage is a big issue, particularly here in Trinidad and Tobago. You know, we have a drainage issue and you see it anytime rain falls and certain areas that are below sea level, such as our capital, Port of Spain, you know, just maybe half hour of constant rain and there's going to be flooding, you know, to head out of Port of Spain, right? I think something that our listeners could relate to and something that is often overlooked is the power of trees, of vegetation and the ability to, you know, hold the soil, absorb the water, delay the flow of water that would cause erosion. And also in terms of carbon sequestration, you know, removing some of that greenhouse gas that is emitted from human activities. So in terms of addressing climate resilience, it's really taking a holistic approach. And I know that sounds cliche, but it's recognizing that we are part of a larger ecosystem. We seem to think that everything revolves around the human ecosystem, you know, the built environment, but we exist within a natural ecosystem. And anytime we try to, you know, disregard nature's laws, you know, she shows us who's in charge, right? So when we are looking at development, and, you know, sometimes it may seem that in order to coexist with the environment that we have to abandon our ambitions for development. And I say no to that because I am pro-development, but I promote development that is in harmony with the environment. And that, to me, that is not an elusive goal. It comes back to risk management. It comes back to being mindful and being intentional with whatever plans or infrastructure or developments that we intend to embark on.
As you're talking, let me just reset. Let me just come back to what you've said. The environment is important. We know this. But in the Caribbean specifically, we are naturally predisposed to hazards. But even though that might be the case, there are ways that we can mitigate a lot of this through risk assessment. And some of that is taking a more civil engineering approach to development. The same way, you know, growing up, I knew when rain was coming way down yonder because I smelt it, I saw the clouds. The same things from a planning standpoint, right? So if we know that every time rain falls, it runs down this hill and the whole place flood up, you shouldn't probably build a house right there or something to that effect, right? All these different things, because what they actually do is make the problem worse. And then the other thing that I've heard you say is that in our quest for development and modernizing the Caribbean, we are also creating a problem if we are not replanting trees or replanting vegetation elsewhere. Because again, from my experience growing up, I grew up in a yard with a whole bunch of trees and everybody had trees. And now you go back up, it's three-story concrete houses and all the trees cut down. There's no more yard space. We're packing every square inch of the yard with the house. So what you're saying is that we don't have to sacrifice our ambitions for bigger houses or bigger malls or movie theaters. If we're going to remove vegetation or trees to put up this building, what are we doing to compensate for all the things we've removed to put up this building? Yes, is that what I heard you say?
To an extent. So my podcast is called Climate Conscious. And I even observed it personally that when you become more mindful and more conscious of your direct connection with the environment, some of the things that you think you want, it changes. You know, our concept of development has largely been imported by what we have observed in the global north, the developed nations. And we try to fit that into a Caribbean context. And that's where we land up in trouble, as we see, right? Because it wasn't designed for us. You know, that's part of my mission, to get us thinking about what does a sustainable Caribbean look like. And that vision, that image has to come from within us. So, you know, it's really a journey to figure out what a sustainable future for the Caribbean looks like. And yes, we will take influences from, you know, everywhere, from all our partners, large and small. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to really tailor it for the Caribbean context. And we have the capacity to do that. You know, I firmly believe in our ability as Caribbean people, supported by the diaspora, supported by our international development partners, you know, to really frame that sustainable Caribbean future.
Thank you for sharing that, because it's not until you said it that it connected. Our idea of development is important. It's not natural to us. We've mostly taken on the influence of the global north and not creating our own version of what a modern Caribbean and a developed Caribbean looks like. So thank you for sharing that. You've mentioned the diaspora. So most of my audience, we're in the diaspora, part of the global north. Someone listening, but like, what does have to do with me? I live in Florida. I live in New York. I live in Boston. I don't live in the Caribbean. Why should I care? Why should we care?
Well, one thing I've observed about the Caribbean diaspora communities that I've interacted with, such as you know, the Caribbean Podcast Directory, is that y'all show a very deep appreciation for your heritage. You show a very deep love and respect for the Caribbean, even though many of you may not have been born here, but you still acknowledge that your roots and, you know, showing, being concerned or wanting to take action is part of preserving that heritage and allowing it to continue. I know being out there and maybe just visiting maybe once a year, if possible, you know, pre-COVID, you might visit the Caribbean and you only really get a snapshot. But I think having that connection to the Caribbean, there's something there and there's an interest in having a positive impact. You see it whenever we have a natural disaster, for example, with St. Vincent and even with Haiti, the diaspora mobilizes their troops. And I would like to see that happen more proactively in terms of supporting Caribbean resilience, right? I think the diaspora has a privilege in terms of kind of straddling the two worlds, but there's also the lived experience of the Caribbean, which is different. So I think the diaspora can come in terms of engaging in ongoing dialogue to, you know, exchange ideas, to provide sustained support. So it's not like a one-off response that we see when a hazard occurs or a natural disaster occurs. You know, you all have this opportunity to create space for us to tell our stories. You know, because it might be tempting for the diaspora to speak for the Caribbean. But as I mentioned, you know, there are some dynamics there that we really need space to get the international community's attention and also the support. It may be funding, it may be expertise, it may just be being an advocate for Caribbean sustainability, because that's your heritage, you know. And, you know, some people may not be interested at all. You know, they just adopted the first world life. I want to leave that behind. But there, I think there's a large community of you who genuinely care for the Caribbean and hold that deep connection. So we see you as partners and advocates for our development.
Thank you for sharing that. And in a more tangible way, I guess each listener would go back to their country and kind of see what's happening from an environmental standpoint. I mean, you talked about how we can create, as a diaspora, create space for stories the way that you're here now telling the story of the Caribbean. And so in what way are other people telling the story of the Caribbean that's not necessarily true, or the Caribbean isn't telling that story? Am I making sense?
Yeah, so I guess what I was getting to is that the lived experience is the lived experience. You know, you can't buy that. So I think it's important to create space for that. Yes, we need persons who may not be living here to advocate for us, but we also need to help those who are experiencing the issues to tell the story. And also, what I wanted to highlight is that climate change and even sustainability, it's multidimensional. So you have the physical impacts that are highlighted anytime there's a disaster or there's, you know, a major event. But there's also the social, the socioeconomic impact. And I think that's an area where the diaspora can also, you know, have an influence. As you mentioned, you know, you will look at your country, your home country, and see where you can, you know, be of service. And these are ways that we build resilience. When we look at underserved or at-risk groups or communities, and maybe there's something there that you can contribute. So, you know, coming back to what you were asking about telling the story, what I was thinking is that, you know, I'm sure there are people out there who still think that people in the Caribbean live in huts, you know. So it's about amplifying the voice of the Caribbean and, you know, bringing us to the main stage in terms of people may have their own ideas of what the Caribbean is and what we face and what we need, you know. But it's, I guess, coming from within and showing them who we are, and also showcasing that many of these solutions, you know, they originate within the Caribbean, but we need support. And doing the podcast, which has a Caribbean focus. Yes, I interview persons from outside of the region, but I have come across so many, you know, innovative persons doing the work in the Caribbean. I met Danny and Dana Lynn from Jamaica, Christine in Guyana, Marcel in Bermuda. And I wasn't aware of what they were doing, but it's only through establishing those networks I became aware, and you know, we formed a bit of an informal community. So something like that is what I think, you know, would help, where we establish those links between underground and those in the diaspora who, as I mentioned, they have a privilege and they have an opportunity to bring our stories, connect us maybe to resources or opportunities that would allow us to, you know, further our efforts in creating resilience.
And so before we wrap up, I kind of wanted to get a sense. I know you could speak from Trinidad because that's where you are, but what are some examples of the work being done towards sustainability in the Caribbean?
Sure. So sustainability is being tackled from many angles and many levels. An important part of it would be at the government level, at the national level, where most countries have signed on to the Paris Agreement. And they have stated their individual commitments to reducing greenhouse gases in various sectors. So there's that, you know, governments, they sign the conventions and they have certain requirements. I think an area where we kind of lapse in would be implementation. You know, and of course, it's competing resources. Right now, everything is competing with, you know, managing COVID, right? But we can't lose sight of climate change because it's not going away, right? But I've been happy to see a lot of work at the grassroots level where you have a lot of community groups getting involved in conservation and restoration work. And simple things such as beach cleanups, which we might take for granted, but because we have a very bad waste disposal culture and we use a lot of plastics, single-use plastics, a lot of those materials have been washing up on our beaches. And it might seem simple, but it sensitizes the persons in the communities who are involved in these beach cleanups, you know, the impact that their activities have. So there's a lot of work, I would say, at the grassroots and also educating children, because, you know, they would be the decision makers of tomorrow, but they also are able to influence their families and their homes. So there's a lot of activity around tree planting, recycling, and general awareness of climate change and climate action. Coming back to the regional level, given that the region is so, I don't want to use the word fragile, but maybe that would describe, you know, our vulnerability. But we're also fragmented, you know, being small islands. But the climate crisis, to me, it emphasizes the importance of integration. And CARICOM, as an organization, has been doing a lot of work in the various areas, and one of which is sustainable energy. Most of the Caribbean islands, they would import fossil fuels. We know fossil fuels are linked directly to greenhouse gases and climate change. So there has been an ongoing trust to transform the region's energy systems away from fossil fuels to sustainable energy, which includes renewables, wind and solar and geothermal, where there's potential for it, like in St. Vincent, and also energy conservation. At all these different levels, there are activities happening. My commitment has been to raise awareness. And I must say that, you know, people have been showing a lot of interest. And, you know, when they understand how it connects to them personally, because it's very important to bring the science to the man in the street, right? Because the scientists are doing, they're doing the work. They're producing the reports. We had a recent report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that, you know, gave us the stats on the science and the predictions going forward, you know. But what does that mean for, you know, you mentioned your uncles were fishermen. What does that mean for the fisherman? What does that mean for the farmer? What does that mean for the teacher? You know, the average citizen and to understand the connection and understand how we can build both individual and community resilience.
Thank you. I mean, this is part of why I really wanted you to be on the podcast to shed light, and that a lot more of us will get involved in how we can support our home countries in the work that they're doing towards sustainability, you know. And to your point, leverage or clout as the diaspora, because you kind of said there is a benefit being in the diaspora. There's more of us, realistically, there's way more of us here in the diaspora than in the region, but we can collectively use those numbers to effectuate change in the region if we really, you know, put muscle and power to, you know, our numbers. So that is something that, you know, we can all figure out how we can do. A lot of Caribbean countries are trying to find ways to engage the diaspora. And if they're trying to engage us, you know, we have to say, yes, well, tell us about this. Don't just, you know, just say, hey, we want money for this. We can say, hey, what about money for that? You know, like get them talking about other things that we feel are important and they should be paying attention to. And then that was the point I was trying to make in the episode, like ask ourselves how we can serve our community, not as a reaction, but being proactive. And I think that's where I was when I recorded that, because I'm like, we can't react to everything. There is something we have to be able to do, even if it's the smallest step, to, like you said, avoid some or mitigate some of this risk. How can we be proactive? You know, helping us find our own voices that way, because I thought I had a voice to say, you know, if the opportunity comes, I can speak towards climate change in Jamaica if I wanted to. I never thought of it because I don't live there. But what you've essentially said, I can create space for somebody doing the work there to be introduced to the audience in the diaspora. And anyone listening, you don't need a podcast or a website to do that. You have, each of us have our own, like you said, spheres of influence, our own networks, our own colleagues who are doing things. And it's a matter of, hey, I know somebody in Jamaica, they have this going on with the environment. People want to be involved in those things, and it's sharing that information. So thank you for putting that in that context. I mean, there's a lot more people could learn from the Climate Conscious podcast. I don't mean to exhaust all of that on here. But again, it's introducing you to the audience and the work that you're doing and the informal network you've created by starting this podcast. So tell everybody where they could find you and all that good stuff.
So you can find the Climate Conscious podcast on all major podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify. You can also connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook at The Climate Conscious. And you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn, Deval Bazzi. So I'll be happy to interact and engage with persons in the Caribbean and the diaspora.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And as I love to say at the end of every episode, walk good.
You've been listening to Carry On Friends, a show about the Caribbean American experience, produced by Breadfruit Media. We post a new episode every 2 weeks on Tuesday. And if you're looking to learn more, buy our merch, or sign up for a newsletter, check out carryonfriends.com. Or find us on all social media platforms at carryonfriends.